Chapter 8. Dockin Bay Charlie 3 was not being used as a bay for dropships, due to some battle damage that Skippy's little elf bots had not yet repaired. The ship had plenty of dockin bays for our small fleet of dropships, and the list of critical repairs was still long enough to be worrisome. Valkyrie was a tough ship. The problem is we had been going from one engagement to the next without the services of a heavy shipyard. Skippy warned me almost every morning that the ship was wearing out a little bit at a time. I had a Maxolk's shipyard on my Christmas wish list, but I wasn't counting on Santa being that nice to me. Anyway, we used that empty bay as a staging and training area, and in this case we used it to process the incoming keepers. They all needed medical checks. In most cases, they needed fresh clothing, and most of them also really needed a shower. The showers and clothes would wait until they got to their cabins. We were putting two in a cabin, as the ship simply didn't have enough berths for all the extra people. To make the process easier on the new people, and more importantly the crew, we allowed the keepers to pair up and choose who they shared a cabin with. What about the 9 assholes who helped the Kristang oppress their fellow humans? They were getting stuffed into the ship's brig. If they didn't like their accommodations, I did not care. Someone had thoughtfully stacked up crates near the airlock, and when I walked into the bay, I turned and climbed up so everyone could see me. Maybe it was my natural charm, my commanding presence, the presence of mech-suited people armed with stun pistols, or just plain curiosity. But the angry and frightened shouting died down to a low murmur when I stepped on the top crate and raised my arms for quiet. "Hello." "Hello," I repeated louder when the talking started up again. When there was silence, I looked from left to right across the crowd. "I am Colonel Joe Bishop, commander of the United Nations Starship Valkyrie. Yes, I am that Joe Bishop from Paradise," I said to get the inevitable question out of the way. The silence was gone as people gaped at me in shock and asked each other what the hell was going on. "Please, please," I waved my arms, raising my voice to be heard above the din. "I'm sure you have many questions, and we will do our best to answer them. If you will give me a minute to speak, I will explain several things you need to know." The crowd fell quiet again. "First, the wormhole to Earth is not closed. We shut it down temporarily to deny aliens access to our homeworld. We have access to Elder technology that can control the operation of the wormhole network they left behind. The Kristang, who controlled Earth back when the Force shipped out, they are dead. We killed them. Earth is free of alien control. Second, this ship is part of a special operations group we call the Merry Band of Pirates." I pointed to the large banner with our logo hanging on the wall behind me. "We have stolen starships from the Kristang, the Theranin, and we stole this battlecruiser from the Maxolks. Valkyrie is the single most powerful warship in the galaxy, and it is ours. Third, I had to wave my hands again for quiet. "We have access to Elder weapons." You heard that right, Elder weapons. There is now a strategic balance of power in the galaxy between the Maxolks, the Rindaloo, and now humanity. They can't attack us without triggering a retaliatory strike that will wipe them out. If I was in the audience right then, my brain would have bounced from WTF to holy shit to this cannot be happening, and I pretty much would have no other thoughts in my head. Except I would not have been one of the brainless dumbasses who sided with the freaking Kristang and volunteered to leave Paradise to prove their continued loyalty to our lizard overlords. Freaking ignorant, moronic keepers. Damn, there were things I wanted to say to those assholes, and standing atop those crates was the perfect opportunity to tell them exactly what I thought of them. As far as I was concerned, there was no difference between keepers and people who still think the Earth is flat. No, that's not correct. The Flat Earth crowd may be willfully ignorant and stupid, but they never took up arms against their own species. The keepers had signed up to fight alongside the lizards and kill their fellow humans, all because they lacked the courage to admit we were all wrong when we thought the Kristang were our saviors. It was the perfect opportunity for Joe Bishop to speak his mind, except shit. The guy standing on those crates was not Joe Bishop, he was Colonel Bishop, commander of the Merry Band of Pirates. One thing that totally sucks about being in a position of authority is that you don't get to do whatever you want. You have to do what is best for the unit. In this case, My unit was humanity as a whole. Back when we captured the Keepers, who were trying to infect Paradise with a bioweapon, one of them told me he didn't know whether the Kristang were humanity's best hope for an ally. What he did know was that the lizards had control of our homeworld, and considering that ugly fact, he could not defy the Kristang, or they might make humans on Earth pay the price. When I was little, very opinionated, and not shy about telling people what I thought about them, my father had given me some valuable coaching that stuck with me, unlike a lot of stuff people tried to teach me over the years. "Joey," my father said, "just because people disagree with you, that might make them dumbasses, but it doesn't make them bad people. You don't know their motivations, what facts they do and don't know, what experiences they had that influenced their decisions." In short, he told me that just because someone disagrees with me, that doesn't mean they are bad people. And just because someone agrees with me, that does not mean they are good people. I wouldn't know if they are good or bad until I knew why they made a decision one way or the other. In front of me were over 200 military personnel who, for many reasons I didn't understand, had chosen to be keepers of the faith. Until I knew why they made what I consider an idiotic decision, I wasn't qualified to judge them. Also, they were going home and would have to reintegrate with society, a society that had changed greatly since they left Earth. I could make myself feel better by yelling at them, or I could maybe do my freaking job and begin the process of healing. Man, I really, really wanted to yell at those assholes. I guess that's why doing the easy thing is easy, but doing the right thing can be hard. When we left Earth with the Expeditionary Force, you were my brothers and sisters in arms. We had a common purpose, to defend our homeworld. A lot of shit has happened since then. I scanned left to right across the crowd, seeing anger and bewilderment, but mostly fear. Fear of the unknown. Fear of the future. Fear of me. "Soldiers," I said slowly, gauging their reactions. "Sailors. Airmen. Marines." I snapped a salute. "Welcome home." The keepers were divided into small groups and shuffled through medical checks. Then they were escorted to their assigned cabins. Inside, they were able to shower, real showers, using the ship's generous supply of hot water. Each person was issued civilian clothing in their sizes, fabricated by Skippy. Understandably, those people who still retained tattered remnants of their original uniforms were fearful about surrendering them, so we provided bags to store their old uniforms. In small groups, they were escorted to the galley for a hot, home-cooked meal. Mostly, I stayed on the bridge, trusting my people to do their jobs. When the last group cleared out of the galley, I left the bridge to prepare food for the crew. Along the way, I met Frey and Adams in a passageway.
"Sir, do you have a moment?"
Frey asked.
"Certainly, Captain."
"Gunny?" I nodded to Adams, trying not to make meeting her seem like a big deal. "How are the keepers settling in?"
"I don't think many of them want to be called keepers anymore, sir. They just wanted out of there. Even the dumbest of them realized they had screwed themselves within a few months after they left Paradise."
"That is good to hear. There will be less trouble for us on the way to Earth. I need to get to the galley for—"
"Sir?"
Frey's eyes were wet, brimming with tears.
"When you addressed them in the docking bay, I thought you would chew them out for being stupid hosers."
She used Canadian slang.
"They thought the same. When you saluted them, I saw fear change to hope."
"Sir," she wiped away a tear with the back of her hand,
"I have never been more proud to be a pirate."
"Everyone deserves a second chance, Captain," I said softly, careful to look at Frey rather than Adams. "It's good to get a measure of revenge against our enemies, but bringing our own people home, that is something special." By that point in our galactic kick-ass tour, we had gotten sweet revenge by pounding targets on Rikers. We had made friends and been rewarded with a very generous offer of transport ships when we met the mighty 98th Fleet. And we had rescued a bunch of dumbass keepers. The fourth stop on our smash it tour was another target, this one promising to yield both feel-good payback and practical value. The payback part of the equation would be taking out a group who had caused widespread misery across the galaxy and several times directly caused major problems for the merry band of pirates.
The practical value would be that, well, that group would not be causing trouble for anyone ever again. Taking out our second target would not be an easy pummeling of a defenseless backwater world, owned by a species at the bottom of the Coalition technology ladder. We would be hitting a major military installation protected by a species capable of causing trouble even to our mighty Valkyrie if they put their minds to it. The operation would require careful planning to provide for multiple escape points so we could bail out at any point if we needed to. What was this tough target? Just the main military bioweapons research and development facility of the Theranon, deep under the surface of a world they call Slithin. That group was at least indirectly responsible for the attempt to spread a plague on Paradise, the plot discovered by the Mavericks when they were forced to land on Camp Alpha. That facility is also where the prisoners on Rikers would have been brought after they were sold by the Kristang there. Our people, would have been used for experiments to develop a new type of bioweapon that would be used against humans in the Alien Legion. I can't imagine the horror that would have waited Aisha, Sanjay, John Yang, and the others if we had decided not to rescue them, or the rescue failed. They would have known their bodies were being used to create a weapon to kill other people, and there wasn't anything they could do about it while the weapon grew inside them. The Theranon would have told the test subjects exactly what was going on, because those cyborgs love to inflict pain and suffering. Remember, the Theranon consider all other species to be inherently inferior, regardless of their level of technology. The current very narrow gene pool of the Theranon is the result of one small group who thought they were the master race, wiping out anyone who didn't look or think like them. They did that before their homeworld was discovered by the Maxalts, so they can't blame outside interference for what happened to their society. Anyway, fuck them. Like I said, that bioweapons research facility was a tough target. Tough because its defenses were designed not only to provide protection against peer species like the Jirapatha, but against the patrons of the Jirapatha. It was an open secret that one of the major programs of research conducted on that world was directed at developing bioweapons for use against the Maxalts themselves. The purpose of that very risky research had one goal: to provide a credible doomsday weapon against the Maxalts so that Apex species would think twice about taking major direct action against the Theranon. After seeing how the Maxalts were punishing the Bosphorok for the ghost ship raids, the Theranon must have felt justified they had made the right decision. Basically, those stocks of bioweapons were a lesser version of our elder weapons. They assured the Maxalts could not wipe out the Theranon without the probability of suffering terrible retaliation. Maybe. The problem was, nobody knew for sure whether the Theranon actually had bioweapons that were sophisticated enough to affect their patrons. Of course, the little green cyborgs could not test the weapons without incurring massive punishment from the Maxalts, so the Theranon had to demonstrate that they possessed the technology to create a bioweapon that should be feared. That was why the Theranon sold their biological weapons expertise to other species. Also, every couple of decades, a mystery illness would sweep across the galaxy, affecting a different species each time. Those plagues were highly infectious, but rarely fatal. They were designed to get attention, but not cause so much damage that the victims would hit back with conventional weapons. The Theranon denied all knowledge of the periodic plagues, even offering to research cures for a generously discounted price. Everybody knew the Theranon were behind the plagues, and no one could prove it. The other species tolerated the plagues because they gave a glimpse into the highly advanced technology of the Theranon. And because the plagues made the Maxalts fear their clients just might have weapons of mass destruction that could threaten even the Apex species. In planning our attack, we had access to analysis by the Jirapatha, who had several times considered hitting the facility on Slithin, or actually, under the surface of Slithin. Every time a mystery plague swept across the galaxy, the Jirapatha Home Fleet Strategic Planning Office dusted off the last set of plans and looked at the problem again. Destroying that site was a major problem for the Jirapatha, even for the Maxalts, even for us. The base was buried more than 100 kilometers below the surface of Slithin, a rocky planet about the size of Venus. It had a thin atmosphere and was basically a dead world. Plate tectonic activity had ceased there a billion years ago, locking the thick crust into a solid, stable mass. The crust was heavy in metals like iron, making the surface tough and thick, and that was a major obstacle to a successful strike there. There was more bad news for us in the Jirapta analysis. The base was set into a cavern with huge magnetically powered shock absorbers suspending the actual base away from the cavern walls. The base was mostly self-contained. It generated its own geothermal power from pipes sunk into the magma below, using horizontal vents to expel excess heat. Water was pulled from deep aquifers in the rocks, and waste materials were pumped down into the magma layer to be burned. There were only two access points, elevator shafts with intermediate stations every 30 kilometers. At the top of each shaft, anyone and anything going down to the base had to go through 6 layers of inspection. The last 2 layers were controlled by guards who had their cybernetic implants disconnected from the network while they were on duty. Anyone getting past all the surface security could descend only 30 kilometers before getting out of the elevator for another 2 layers of inspection, including guards. They then got into another elevator, went down 30 kilometers, did it again, and again. The last layer of security was 40 kilometers above the base. The last station had its own independent AI, plus guards who again had their cybernetics disabled to prevent tampering. From the last station, it was a straight drop along the 3rd elevator shaft, the problem for us being there was no way to get there from the surface without being detected. Oh, also there are 3 large military bases on the surface, a 3-layer strategic defense network in orbit, and 3 heavy battleship task forces continuously rotated in and out of orbit. Every time the Jirapta studied the issue, they concluded an attack on Slithin was not worth the high cost, if an attack was even possible. After a while, studying an attack there became a standard exercise for junior students at the Jirapta War College, rather than a matter for serious consideration. Skippy, I threw up my hands and slumped back in my office chair after reading the summary of the Jirapta report. How the hell are we going to do this? With great difficulty, as usual, he sighed. Why is everything so freaking difficult? Hey, don't blame me. You are the idiot who insists on hitting tough targets. We have to hit well-defended targets, Skippy. We need to make the point that we can strike anyone, anywhere. Make the assholes of this galaxy fear us. If we only beat up the lizards, other aliens will laugh at us. Fine. Okay, I understand your point. Does it have to be this target? Yes. You know why. We had discussed the subject over and over. We had to take out the research base buried deep inside Slithin for some very important reasons. Having Elder weapons to enforce a policy of mutual assured destruction was a great way to avoid the ultimate Armageddon for Earth, but that is all they were good for. My fear was that someone like the Theranin would find a way to sneak a bioweapon to Earth. If people on our homeworld started getting sick and even dying, we would be enraged about it. But unless the plague threatened to exterminate our species, we would not trigger our stock of Elder weapons, because that would result in extinction for humanity. Hitting the research facility on Slithin would hamper the ability of the Theranin to develop a bioweapon against humans, and almost more importantly, it would send a powerful message to the entire galaxy. If we could take out Slithin, we could hit anyone, anywhere. So, we had to hit Slithin, as a deterrent both physical and psychological. The question was, how? And okay, yes, we did not absolutely have to hit Slithin. We could choose another target. But whatever target we chose, it had to demonstrate that we could strike anyone, anywhere. Slithin was as good as any. As a bonus, we had to pass near Slithin on our way to Paradise, so I was determined to make our statement there. Let's go down the list again, please, I asked. Again? He groaned. Yes? Maybe we missed something. Fine, whatever. Railguns are not a good option. Correct. To punch down through 100 kilometers of iron-rich planetary crust would take so many railgun shots we would need to halt to take the guns offline for maintenance. The whole time we sat in orbit to bombard the target, we would be vulnerable to their SD network and their fleet. Valkyrie is powerful, but not invulnerable, as you know. Yeah, shit. No space rocks either? To accelerate an asteroid to relativistic speeds would take months, Joe. Starship engines simply are not designed for long-term acceleration. If we want to travel a significant distance, we jump. Yeah, that is also not an option, I agreed. Plus, the rules of this war don't allow dropping rocks onto inhabited planets. Like we care about the rules, he chuckled. We're pirates, Joe. We do care, Skippy.
What?
He sputtered.
Why?
Because humans are now one of the three apex species. Those rules were established by the senior species to protect them. If we expect to be treated like one of the big players, we have to abide by their rules. Those rules now protect us.
Okay, I see that. More rules for us to follow. Great! What a pain in the ass!
Let's keep going. We can't shake the base apart by using railguns to set a vibration in the planet's crust?
Nope. No way, Jose. That crust is thick, and the base is suspended on shock absorbers. The Theranin did that to discourage anyone from wasting their time by dropping rocks, unless they are really big rocks.
The pinheads know the danger from space rocks. They have a detection system that extends almost a quarter light year from the planet. If they detect an incoming rock, they can knock it off course with nukes.
The base has a self-destruct system based on atomic compression devices backed up by conventional nukes.
You can't hack into that system and trigger the self-destruct?
Ah, that would be a no, Joe.
The little green pinheads are concerned about an enemy doing that, so the self-destruct mechanism is entirely manual. Before you ask, no, I can't hack into a Theranin and control one like a puppet.
Why not? You did that with Bite Me Elmo.
I was able to do that with Elmo because he was a Maxulx. Their cybernetics are much more sophisticated than the technology used by the Theranin. It doesn't matter. Anyone going from the surface to the base must have their cybernetics disabled for the entire journey. The implants are disabled on the surface and not reactivated until they are inside the base. Unless you can brainwash a Theranin to join our side and commit suicide for us, then no way can...
Okay, forget it. I wish this place wasn't so freaking far underground.
Shit.
I thought breaking into the Pixie factory on Detroit was tough.
That was tough, Joe. It was nearly impossible, as you discovered when your outbound jump nearly failed.
I don't want to think about it.
That jump, which threw us forward in time, had very nearly killed us, and we in the dropship didn't even know anything was wrong. There were aspects of the time-shifted jump that even Skippy did not understand, like how we went forward in time, yet still emerged near the Flying Dutchman, which had moved while we were in the time warp. He told me that thinking about it made his head hurt, and the only possible explanations were things he very much did not like to consider and would be dangerous to tell monkeys about. Whatever. It wasn't like I was ever going to understand the hyperspatial physics involved. When Sims, Smythe, and I agreed to attempt a strike against Slithin, my first idea had been to jump a remotely controlled DeLorean loaded with a nuke. Unfortunately, there were many reasons why we could not do that. The base was so deep under the surface that the far end of a jump wormhole could not be projected through so much solid material, and the strong gravity well would distort the wormhole's event horizon before it could form. Although wormholes are shortcuts from here to there, allowing ships to travel instantaneously without having to go through all the space between, that was not true about establishing a jump wormhole. When creating a jump wormhole, a ship's drive reaches out through other dimensions to form an event horizon at the far end where the ship wants to go. That event horizon then has to project the near end of the event horizon back to the ship, and doing that requires a brief connection through what we call local space-time. Even in deep interstellar space, there is always some junk floating around. The wormhole can deal with a minor amount of interference, but if something like a star or a planet or even a big asteroid is in the way, the jump attempt will fail. Advanced technology jump drives have a limited ability to curve a wormhole so it bends around an interfering object, and of course, Skippy can make that curve better than anyone. But even he could not make a jump drive wormhole form through 100 kilometers of solid rock. Even if we could attack the base with a DeLorean, we should not do that, a fact that Smythe reminded me of. Someday we might have to fight the Maxulx, or even the Rindaloo, maybe both of them. A fight like that would require using our best tricks, so we couldn't let the senior species know the full scope of our capabilities. Jumping a DeLorean into the Theranin base would not only alert the bad guys that we had such frightening technology, they would study the data carefully and possibly figure out how to copy the technique. Crap. Although the secret of our existence was out in the open, we had to retain most of the secrets about how we did things. Skippy is certainly incredible and unique, but the senior species also had impressive technology, and they might have their own elder AIs. The last thing we should do is show the bad guys how to use our own tricks against us. Crap! The strike against Slithin needed to walk a fine line between demonstrating we had the ability to hit anyone, anywhere, and also not demonstrating the truly amazing things we could do, The worst part was that any attempted attack had to succeed, or we would look weak and foolish. As Skippy said, I have no one to blame but myself for getting myself into these situations. We had 19 hours of travel time before we needed to commit to either continuing towards Slithin or diverting straight to Paradise. 19 hours to go, and every idea we had developed was discarded for one reason or another. The smart thing to do would be going straight to Paradise or choose another target. But by that time, I had spent so much time and energy thinking of a way to hit Slithin that I freaking hated the place. Besides, no one ever accused me of doing the smart thing. With 7 hours before the deadline, and no workable solution to attack the base underneath Slithin, I went to the gym for a quick workout. Truthfully, I didn't know what else to do, and exercise always clears my head. On the way, I nearly tripped over a bot that scurried around a corner, its multiple arms tipped with a variety of tools. Around the corner, I saw the bot had removed an access panel on the lower right side wall and left parts scattered all over the floor. Skippy, I called. What is this bot doing? What bot? The one here. Let me check. Wait. Hey, Bilby?
Yeah, Colonel dude,
the ship's AI responded. What's up? The bot performing work at my location, what is it doing?
Wow. Let me check.
Neither of you know? I threw up my hands. Who is controlling this thing?
Let me answer, please, Skippy said, which was great, because talking with Bilby's surfer dude slacker personality could be frustrating.
Joe, the bot is controlling itself. It is simply performing scheduled maintenance.
It should not leave parts and tools on the floor. They could be hazardous if the ship has to maneuver abruptly.
I will adjust the standard operating protocols to—
Hold on.
Neither of you were aware that this thing is doing whatever it is doing?
No,
Skippy sighed with an implied weary sigh, as once again he had to answer a stupid question from a stupid monkey.
These bots are fairly smart, Joe. They are quite capable of scurrying around to do their work without me or Bilby looking over their shoulders.
Okay, I do have a submind somewhere that is probably sort of monitoring it.
Me too, I think,
Bilby added in his usual super helpful fashion.
I have a subroutine that checks on it for safety to make sure it doesn't interfere with ship operations. You are cool with that?
Ignoring his question, I asked, is this normal for AIs?
Yes, Joe.
That time Skippy's words included an implied duh. We can't consciously watch everything that goes on aboard a ship. It would be soul-crushingly dull. We delegate stuff to keep our sanity.
Do all AIs do that?
I can't speak for all AIs, for I am unique and special, Skippy sniffed. However, yes, that is built into the basic architecture of most AIs. Tell me, Joe, do you consciously control the beating of your heart?
No, but I know it's there, doing its job.
Skippy, meet me in my office.
Okay. I thought you were going to the gym.
I was. This is more important.